runasradio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 279 with guest Stephen Rose, recorded Thursday, August 23rd, 2012. Run As Radio is produced each week by PWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. We're going to get right into it today because my guest is the one, the only, the Windows product manager and worldwide commercial community manager for the Windows Business Group at the corporate headquarters in Redmond, the greatest title known to man. It's Stephen Rose.
How are you, Mr. Campbell?
I'm good, sir. It's good to talk to you.
Always a pleasure. This is what, like my fifth time on the show, I think, now, something like that?
Well, you're my go-to guy when it comes to real Windows conversations, although Microsoft has been disturbingly quiet over the past few months coming into Windows 8.
Yeah. That does happen.
Yeah, it's a new dynamic from my perspective. As years of working with Microsoft, you know, we had this wave of big openness, and it seems like we're pulling it in a little bit more. But it feels like those times are almost past now. Like, Win 8 is imminent. It's on my MSDN site now, so I'm excited.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're changing things, but we're changing it for the better. And as we look to really modernize what we do and to really understand how people work, I think the way that we communicate with our audience, the way that we'll release products, is going to be different, because we're really looking to meet those needs. And by telegraphing everything we do months and months and months in advance, it's not helping business. Our competitors don't do that. And our
right.
goal is not just to be evolutionary, but to be revolutionary. And I think with what we're doing with Windows Phone and, you know, what we're doing with Windows 8 and the new changes that we've made to SCCM and Server and Windows Intune, we're definitely moving in that direction. And mm-hmm. that's very exciting, but it's definitely different for a company and for our base, you know, the guys that we work with all the time that have been doing this stuff since NT4.0. It's probably our biggest change in thought since we went to Windows 95.
Sure.
And it really threw a lot of people off. And I think we're kind of going back to that. So I think it's for the good. But I think that, you know, the status quo days are over. And I think that that's very exciting. But it's going to take a while for everybody to sort of get used to that.
So I'm an IT guy, and I probably just got my Windows 7 deployment done early this year or late last year, and here comes another operating system. What am I looking at? Should I skip? Like, what does make sense to me?
Well, it's been 3 years since we put Windows 7 out, so
sure.
I think that's kind of a critical thing. People saying, like, we just did Windows 7. I'm like, no, it's been 3 years. It's 3 years in November since we released this thing, so
yeah.
It's not like it just came out. But I think, you know, for folks that are still on XP, which is still a significant portion of our audience, they need, you know, to really start moving. They're down to, you know, as of today, around 590 some odd days until there is no support for XP. So the goal with that is, you know, start to do your testing on 8. The great thing is if it works in 7, it works in 8.
Right.
And what we're hearing from a lot of our Windows 7 clients is, you know what, we're going to, you know, we're going to use Windows 7 on a lot of our desktops for the people that don't, you know, travel or move around, or where the, you know, some of the features in Metro may not make the most sense, and go that route. But where we have, you know, where Windows 8 apps and the Windows 8 store and where Windows to go and the new BitLocker makes sense, or when we're seeing, tablet scenarios, then Windows 8 is going to make sense. I think what's interesting, this conversation you and I had, is it's really going to be the first time that we're going to see heterogeneous environments being managed, that IT guys are going to have to go, look, I've got 7 machines and I've got 8 machines, and they're all going to live together and they're all going to play together. And where we're used to trying to standardize and have one OS or one desktop, we're really going to be managing 2 for quite a while. And it makes sense to do so. So it's definitely different.
I mean, don't I still want 8 on the desktop? Is there any reason not to do that?
I think the big thing is, A, to make sure you're still going to have to go smoke test all your apps. So you want,
right.
A, want to make sure that all of your apps work. For some users, We have like a help desk where the average person's been there for 10, 15 years. They use three apps every day.
Yep.
And the amount of effort that it would take to move those people over to Windows 8 after you just finished getting them off of XP to 7. I think we want to let those folks continue to do their job, get comfortable with 7, go for the sales department that wants the shiny new device, that wants, you know, the sexy stuff for whoever they're working with. Give them 8 and also wait till some of the folks get 8 at home. I think one of the things that was really great for us with Windows 7 was a lot of employees would go to their company saying, hey, I got a Windows 7 machine and I love it. And I like, you know, what I can do with it and when can I get that on my desktop?
Yeah.
So I think as consumers get that, that will also help to move that trend as well.
Well, and clearly these work models like the sales guy where you're bringing the machine to the work, I mean, 8 seems to be the way to go. If I'm an IT guy, I'm struggling with iPads in my organization right now because I can't control them.
Right.
I want something. RT to me doesn't seem all that important. I want Pro.
Yeah. RT, there is some really great ways to manage it. Leveraging SCCM, leveraging Windows Intune, we have some great management. We're going to be able to keep an eye on those machines. We're certainly going to be able to do a lot more than we can with iPads to make sure they're up to date, that
right.
they have appropriate antivirus. But yes, I think if you want to dig deep into group policies, you want BitLocker and you want Windows to go and you want branch cache and that functionality, absolutely. Pro device is going to be the way to go. And Pro is also going to have the horsepower if you're running anything that's graphic intensive, if you want to do VDI, things like that. The licensing is also going to lend itself very nicely to be able to do that. So I agree. I think it's going to be an interesting mixed environment. But we've had a lot of people that were looking at moving to iPads that have now looked at Windows 8. And the best thing is that you don't need to start doing anything new. All of your apps that are critical to you doing business today, you're going to be able to use on your Windows 8 device. And you, like many companies that we're working with, can build Windows 8 applications and run those as well and run those side by side. I love the fact that you can run a Windows 8 app and a Windows 7 desktop app side by side at the same time. So it's that great level of functionality that whole best of both worlds.
Yeah, the hybrid model seems to work the best.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge, of course, is if you're trying to do touch with an app that's just never been built for touch.
Agreed. But, you know, again, that's the other nice aspect is I have three machines. I have a Windows 7 machine. I have a Windows 8 laptop, which they just updated the touch driver, so I can do the swipe to bring out the charms bar, and I can do the swipe within the app, and I've got a full, I have a Samsung Series 7 slate, and I use all three of them. But yeah, absolutely, there are times when I just need to pull out a keyboard and mouse because I'm doing PowerPoint, which requires a lot of little touching of moving icons and stuff around. But what's great is all the investments that companies have made in mice and keyboards and printers and all that, again, they're still going to work with Windows 8.
They just work.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what people want. I mean, you and I have said this in many of our presentations. As great as it is for us, our end users don't care how it works. They just want it to work. And that's what's really important.
It makes me wonder how many implementations are going to spend most of their time in that desktop mode. That's where my apps are. That's where I'm going to live.
Mm-hmm. As for myself, I do about half and half. I spend a lot of time on the desktop doing stuff because I'm running Outlook, the new version of Outlook.
Mm-hmm.
I'm running the new Office, so that launches on the desktop, and Outlook is where I spend a lot of my time, PowerPoint. But I do like it when I go to the desktop now that I'm within, the Windows 8 desktop now, that the new version of Office, it pops up when I have a new email. That link now pops up right there on that start screen. And as I'm using some of the apps that I use when I'm out on the road where I need currency and weather and I'm looking at hotels and I'm looking at travel and those aspects, I see now the two really working nice together. Those Windows 7 applications are the ones that are now being built for Windows 8 running side by side to see how that's interacting. And I'm starting to see how I move between the two a little more seamlessly. But there definitely is that division and where I spend a lot
sure.
of time. And yeah, I'm spending a lot of time on the desktop.
Now, you, being a Microsoft employee, have access to these early bits of Office 2013, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
we're running the same public bits that are available to everybody. So we're running the preview bits.
Okay.
I ran a much earlier version of this quite a while ago, before it was public. And I gotta tell you, it's night and day. They've done a great job, but we are running the public beta, the same one that everyone else does.
Mm-hmm.
I'm using Link. We've just upgraded our Link server. So the new Link is just fantastic. It really works well. It works well with touch. works well with non-touch. The Office, I think one of the cool things you realize is when you're on a touch device, that all the buttons space themselves out a little bit more to make it a little bit more touch-friendly. So it's kind of cool the way that all comes together.
Yeah, you know, of all of the control sets, I think the ribbon lends itself best to touch.
It does. Absolutely. I think when you look at the Explorer, and I like that, I get people going, well, I'm trying to get into properties and I can't do that. And you go into the Explorer and you hit that little carrot on the right, and all of a sudden, all of the right mouse click motions are all right there. You like just single click it, and there's properties, there's delete, there's permanently delete or delete all, and all of these other features and even new ones that come up. I think there's some great ones now in OneNote. It's really nice. And then to see the OneNote Touch version, the OneNote version that's been specifically for Win 8 that you can find in the Win 8 App Store, I think that's a neat idea with the circle, you know, touch bar and the circle options to take that to a whole nother level, and where we may see things start to go with Office in the future.
The other thing that's interesting to me now is, I mean, 64-bit is becoming more and more prevalent in the Microsoft Tools suite. I mean, a 64-bit version of Office 2010 didn't get a lot of traction, but 2013, they seem to be pushing on it more. Do you think it's going to become the norm now that regular desktop machines should be running 64-bit OSs?
Well, I think anybody now that's looking to buy a lot of laptops, I think if, you know, anybody who says, well, I'm going to go out and buy a bunch of 32-bit, I don't think you're being very real. I think, you know, those were folks who did Vista 64, did XP 64, where there was very little support and they had a lot of problems.
Yeah.
I've been running, I know you have too, been running 64-bit desktops since, you know, Win 7 came out, and I have yet to find something that didn't work properly or wasn't supported. Mm-hmm. And now more and more things are being written to optimize the 64-bit, so it really doesn't make sense anymore.
Yeah, my big workstation was a 64-bit XP machine first, but that, you know, we were big on addressing large chunks of memory, and that's, you know, that's the developer hat going on.
Right.
I'm just starting to think about what my reference machine is in 2013. For building on a laptop. I mean, is it really a 4-core, 8-gig machine, and it's got to be a 64-bit OS?
That's what I'm running. I'm running, you know, my main machine now is the new Asus ZenBook. It's an i7 core. Mm-hmm. It's got 4 gig of RAM, 256 gig SSD. It boots in, you know, about 4 to 6 seconds, and it's 64-bit, and everything runs beautifully on it. And what's nice is whether I'm using Photoshop or CAD, right down to basic apps, it's all going to run fast, and it's going to use the horsepower that it needs to do the job.
But is there any reason to run 64-bit with 4 gigs of RAM? Isn't the whole reason to have 8 gigs of RAM?
Some of the Ultrabooks are only coming now with 4. Some are coming with 8. But, yeah, you know, it is one of those, you know, most people never really use all of 4. And if you are, how many things are you really keeping open? I think, you know, with 8, it's great. Now we're starting to see 8 becoming that standard in the machines because the cost is going down.
Sure.
The big thing is, when are the SSDs going to finally drop in price where we're getting that 500 gig SSD standard, and, you know, we finally see the death of the RPM drives? And we're getting close to that. I'm starting to see, you know, a 32 gig SSD with a 500 gig non in that mix, but more and more, especially with Ultrabooks and people wanting thinner. And now with the upcoming, you know, there's a new version of the Asus where the screen removes, the new tablets that I'm seeing, it's all SSD because of heat and form factor.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I mean, I just don't need an SSD that big. I lived pretty comfortably on 128s, and I got a 256 in my Asus because I'm storing everything on the cloud now. I have too many devices. I can't have stuff on a machine anymore.
No.
I can't find it.
No, I went to Exchange Online, which was a big one for me because the PST was the big issue. Yeah. And I recommend, if anybody is looking to do Exchange, do Exchange Online. We have a 25 gig PST. I've got, you know, 17 gig with all of my data. But it's great because people aren't working on one machine anymore. We work on 2 to 3 different devices. So having Outlook now completely in the cloud, I leverage SkyDrive and SkyDrive Pro, which is great because now I have access to that document on my phone, on my laptop, on my desktop, wherever I go. I have a drag and drop folder on my Win 7 machine. I use the native client in Win 8 for that. And then what we're looking at in our corporate scenarios is with Windows to go to use folder redirection and use SkyDrive and use UEV, the user experience virtualization, which then means as soon as somebody makes a change to an app or anything on one machine, it's immediately on all of the other machines to create that standardization. And I think you hit it on the head that once you get above 256, unless it's a home machine and you're storing a ton of photos and you feel uncomfortable about putting it up in the cloud, You know, you're absolutely right. With most of it in the cloud and with companies now hosting SharePoint, Office 365, the need for that has really dramatically gone down.
Well, these days when it's a ton of photos, it's a terabyte anyway. Like I don't have anywhere else to put it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm envious for IT managers today because if they're really leveraging the cloud and folder redirection, all this other stuff, the days of somebody coming in with a laptop saying, my laptop died, and you having to go, you know, into the drive and try to bring back all the data because they've never backed it up, they've never done this, are over. You go, hi, here's your new laptop, connect it to the domain, log in, give it 2 or 3 minutes, and you're ready to go.
Right.
And just give, you know, your local temp PST on your machine a few minutes to sync, and you're ready to go.
Well, and let's dig into Windows to Go more. So this is the my whole life in a USB key?
Yeah. Basically, you can walk up, you can hand your employee with enterprise licensing, you have a one-to-one license. So if you've bought 50 enterprise software assurance VL licenses, you can give 50 users sticks. And the bottom line is you hand them the stick, 32 gig, 64 gig, 128, they put it into their machine. They F12 boot right off of it, and now your full Windows 8, all of your apps, fully deployed, everything you do is now on the stick. It's built and optimized for USB 3, so it's incredibly fast.
Right.
It is as fast as the local SSD, because the drives are not your standard USB 3 drives. If you actually go out to the Springboard site and you take a look, we have a whole bunch of information on the specs, and really, the drives that are being approved and authorized, and in October, we'll have a bunch of certified drives that are out there, are basically mini SSDs. So everything you need is on this drive. It can be BitLocked. You can add direct access to it, GPOs. You treat the drive just like a machine. So what's great is for that user, let's say you get a temp worker who's going to work with you for a month. They walk in with a copy of, you know, Windows 7 Home. Not a big deal. You give them the drive. They plug it in. They boot up off of it. And they are now on your domain, fully managed, ready to go. They work with that. They go home. They plug into their home PC. They do that. At the end of that, they hand you back the drive or you turn off that account and they're off. So it's fully managed, but you have that flexibility of not sending somebody a new PC saying, hi, here's your drive. Plug it into whatever machine you have at home. You also can't see it because it never touches the base OS.
Right.
So even if that home PC is infected, it doesn't affect the Windows to Go drive because they're literally, it's only just leveraging the hardware itself. And the first time it boots up, it finds all the drivers, it loads all the base USB, you know, drivers and all the Windows 8 drivers, and it's ready to go. And it works beautifully. I've tried on about 10 different types of machines, and every time after that first boot where it goes through, finds the drivers, the webcam work, the touchpad works, the graphics work, it's really amazing. I think it's one of the most exciting features.
I mean, it begs the idea of, can I start doing pool machines?
Yeah.
That have basically almost nothing on them, and everybody's booting from their USB keys to do their work.
I think it's great because one guy said, well, why do I need, you know, Windows to Go? I found a way to put Windows 8 on a USB key and just run it that way. And I said, well, A, there's two problems with that. Number one, you're not doing it legally because you're not following the license agreement. But number two, the moment you put that USB key into that machine, that OS is going to bond with that hardware. As soon as you go to another machine, it's going to come up and say, hi, you've changed too many things in the machine, and it's not going to work properly.
Right.
The thing about Windows to Go in the enterprise is that it will bond with as many machines as you allow, which can be unlimited, or you can say, you know what, only bond with 5 machines, and after that, stop or something, so you can manage it very nicely through the group policy.
All right. But it does have to be properly set up, right? This idea of you are always an in-transit implementation of Windows.
Yeah.
You never really tie into any given piece of hardware. You're just going to stay that way.
Yep. If people want to try it, they can download. We now have a 90-day trial of Windows 8 Enterprise. So they can go out to the Springboard TechNet site. They can download it. And to do a Windows to Go stick, all you have to do is go into your charms bar, click search, and type in Windows to Go. And then you'll see the Windows to Go creator.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, what you'll need to do is you put in a USB 3 stick and you point it towards the ISO that holds the base data, and then you say create the stick, and it will sit there, and about 10 minutes later, it'll say you're done. You pop out your stick, you walk over to your Windows 7 machine, plug it in, boot into it, and boom, you're now able to use Windows 8 on that machine, and you can see how beautifully it works. And you can use any USB stick as long as it's a minimum of 16 gig. We recommend 32.
Right.
But if you have a 32 gig USB, it can even be a 2.0, but 3.0 is recommended and it will work best. You can actually start to try this and play with this right now. It's one of those hidden features, sort of like the problem step recorder. You have to type it in to actually find it. It's the same sort of thing with Windows to go.
Well, and it's one of those things where, what a great way, if you're not ready to migrate your machine, go set up this USB key instead and take that out for a spin so you can see how your machine's going to behave with 8.
Absolutely. Are the drivers going to work? You can install some apps, take a look at it, see what that behavior's like. Absolutely, and it'll work on any Windows 7 certified hardware. It'll work quite nicely for it. So I've built it off of my tablet. I haven't had any problems building it that way.
That's an interesting thing. And there's more and more USB 3 out there.
Yeah, and it's getting more reasonably priced. I'm starting to see the 16 gig USB 3 drives coming down to a decent price. The USB 3 that are certified for Windows to go are still pretty pricey. I think it's $80 for 32 gig, which isn't too bad if you're buying one or two, but I sometimes have to buy 100 at a time.
Ouch.
Yeah, it gets a little more expensive. But you can go online, and I know that Newegg has some, and most of the major retailers do, so you can order those up, and you can start to play with those.
Yeah.
Do 10 of them as a pilot. Give them out to your users for 90 days and see how it works.
Yeah, just checked Amazon just now, and the Kingston 32 gig Data Travel Ultimate 3 is down to about $60.
Nice. There you go.
That's in the ballpark, you know. You can do a lot with that. I think I'd want 164s or 128s. But obviously those prices are going to go up from there.
Absolutely. But I think, you do 10 of those, you give them to your sales team, and they start to play with it and really see how well it's going to work, or give them to some of your early adopters and let them start to play with Windows 8. But the nice thing is they're probably more likely to play with it when they feel they don't have to fully commit and get a little freaked out that they can't find things. It allows them to sort of play with it at the same time.
Exactly.
And put the new version of Office on it.
Yeah, your old machine is there. Just take the stick out and reboot.
Yes. Well, actually, no, it's shut down, because if you take the stick out, the machine locks up for 60 seconds. It's a security feature.
Right.
That if the stick is removed, the whole thing locks up for 60 seconds. You can't do anything. And then the machine shuts down. So
okay.
You actually want to shut down the machine and then pull the stick.
If you put the stick back in that 60 seconds, it'll come back to life?
You're good to go. Matter of fact, you can be running, and this is a cool demo, which I do for people, is I'll run full screen video and I'll pull the stick. And then the video freezes, and then I put in the stick, and the video picks right back up from where it left off, HD 1080p video. And people are like, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen, and just lose their mind.
Yeah.
It's a cool video.
You just blew my mind.
Exactly. You can use the little horse video that comes in Windows 8 with horses running. That's
right.
A really nice one to do. They like that. It's very pastoral.
Nice. It's Well, yeah, but you're just messing with my whole thinking about how I want people to work in my workspace now, that I could set up these licenses and just use the sticks. Why would you jump off those sticks? It's fast enough.
And it's not even how you want people to work. It's how are they working, and how can I go, it's a tablet, it's a USB stick, it's a machine, it's a Windows 8 machine with Windows 7 and a Hyper-V instance because they're a developer and still working with this. That's what's great, is you can really take a look at how your users are working, and there are many options on what's the best scenario to help them to be productive without completely turning their life upside down. And I think that's one of the most exciting things about Windows 8 is we're not, as IT people, forcing them to work with the way we want. We can take a look at how they work and figure out what's the best scenario for them. And that's very exciting.
Yeah, no, it's a big change without a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
The Enterprise Edition, there's a few other key bits here that are distinctive to the Enterprise Edition.
Mm-hmm.
You want to run some of them down for us?
Absolutely. Well, BitLocker is now available both in Pro and Enterprise,
right,
which is great. The big difference with that is rather than if you've got these new machines with, half terabyte drives, is you can choose just to BitLock the data and not the whole drive.
Right.
Considering these folks have got 40, 50 gigs of data on a 500, gig drive, that really reduces time.
Mm-hmm.
Direct Access, one of the big enterprise features, and now it supports IPv4, where it was an IPv6 only implementation, yeah. Which for a lot of IT pros, if they didn't have the right routers, hadn't updated their equipment, or just weren't savvy, they all weren't like an Ed Horley. Hey, it gets a little difficult to do. So they've made it a lot easier. It's a 5-step wizard,
yeah.
And it's set up. It's so much easier.
There's a lot of little subtleties to making Direct Access work. You needed 2 contiguous external IP address. Like there were some non-trivial things. The average person was not going to get Direct Access out that in an afternoon. It was a bunch of stuff to get right.
No, or if they only had older Cisco equipment and their routers were a little older, it just wasn't going to work. And I'll tell you, out of all of the features in Windows 7 and in Windows 8, the one that they say, you know, if we had to take one away from you, which one could we never do? It's Direct Access.
Once you've got it, you're addicted.
Oh, you sit anywhere. You go to a Starbucks, you're halfway around the planet, you're checking your email, there's a link that says, oh, grab this document off the SharePoint site, and you click it, and it's right there. There's no tokens, there's no waiting 60 seconds, mm-hmm. there's no VPNing, and now with virtual smart cards, it's even better, because now there isn't even like I've got to have my smart card reader and plug that in and wait for that to authenticate. So I love virtual smart cards, and Direct Access is like the marriage made in heaven. I think it's just amazing.
In terms of just making it visible that you are remote.
Yeah, I don't care how it works. I just want it to work, and it does that.
Yeah.
And that's especially good if you're a company where you've got a piece of software and the database is remote, where if you're using ACT or you're using Goldmine or you're doing something like that and you go, look, I don't want my salespeople to have their database on their machine. We're going to put it on a corporate server, and it's remote mapped. With Direct Access, as soon as they launch ACT and it goes out and finds that database, it's connected and it's ready to go. Mm-hmm. So that's really great for people that want more control over the data. So I think that's just a really, really great feature. Windows to go, absolutely. We've made some really nice changes to branch cache, another enterprise feature, where the way that it breaks down the data and the bits, it's a better compression. It's a lot faster. So there's some really nice feature functionality there that really starts to make a difference. And then finally, with the enterprise bits, you can sideload apps. So, you know, the deployment guru, Michael Niehaus, is now on our team, mm-hmm. which is great. We love having him. And we're building really good information on, hey, if I'm using MDT 2012, how do I not only push out Windows 8, but how do I make sure that the apps that I want my users to use are right there on that desktop? So that can be built in. You can sideload it. You could do it via GPO or PowerShell script, or by leveraging System Center or by leveraging Windows Intune, you can build a self-service portal. And I think that that's really one of the key things when companies can start to build their own apps, push them out to their users. They don't have to be put in a public app store, anything along that line. That's a really, really key feature. And I think the one of the great things that really separates us from our competitors is companies like Boeing and companies like Vodafone and, you know, so many folks that we're working with going, we are already building apps. We're going to push them out to users. They're going to have them on day one. They're touch friendly. And, you know, we can literally build our own online app store for our salespeople, our internal people to go to, pick the apps they want and push it out.
Well, and I mean, this is something we've done with Group Policy for a while, though folks are still struggling to actually do this, to sort of make this kind of seamless experience that as soon as you're in range of the network, you get this new stuff.
Yeah. And then with Direct Access, again, it's right there. You click on it, you're there, you're always home. And as an IT pro, you know, the thought that if I need to push out a group policy or update software or a feature to a user, if that machine's in sleep, I can wake it up, push it out, and treat it no differently than I would for a machine that sits 50 feet away from me within the four walls of my LAN.
It doesn't really matter at all.
It does not. So sideloading and app management, there's some really great GPOs, some really great security features that have been added. We're actually putting together some long-form documentation. And then in security, the secure boot and measured boot. The fact that it will go through and it will scan the machine for malware and issues along that line and remove those before the OS even boots. And that's been a big issue where people have said, well, Windows isn't secure, which it is. It's an incredibly secure OS, and we've taken it to a whole nother level. We're removing those things that hide inside the OS that are difficult to remove once the system is booted. We've removed that problem by being able to remove that before the OS even boots using UEFI and the smart chips that are built in the smart boot.
It sort of makes you wonder where network access protection and so forth falls now, because it seems like those problems, originally I was putting this out there because it was a way to, when a laptop that had been in the field for a few weeks came home, before he got to play in my domain, he jumped through some hoops. But it seems like we're addressing that with UEFI so much better.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for those folks who never connect to the domain, and that's the thing, is you have salespeople who never connect, but they are running their software, which is connecting to the corporate server and sending updates, but they're not really, ever really coming into the office, that we can protect those folks, that we can make sure that those really, really vicious things that they're going to pick up are going to be protected against ad before that machine even gets into the OS. Again, it's seamless. It runs in the background. They don't need to do anything more, except we just got to flip on the UEFI as part of the policy. And as long as that turns on in the BIOS, you're good to go. We're fully supportive of it and moving forward.
So that a guy who's still in the field can get cleaned up, he doesn't have to come to the office to have that experience.
And that's it. It's you don't need to now send your laptop into the office. You've got Windows to go. You shouldn't have to send your laptop in as much, because you have secure boot and you have measured boot. You also have the refresh feature, where you can push the button and say, you know what? I just don't want to get back to a restore point. I want to turn my machine back to the point it was at when it was handed to me. I want to, remove all this extraneous stuff. And a simple way now to refresh a PC when we hand it to a user, like we do, I love that, on Windows Phone. I give my old phones to friends. I hit a button. I turn around 10 minutes later. Here it is. Hand it off to them, and everything's wiped out. The fact that we have those granular levels with 8, from bring me back to my last good boot, bring me back to the point when you handed me this machine, or put this machine back at a state ready to be refreshed and handed to someone else, we have those different layers of management that we can share with our end users.
For sure. Well, Stephen, we blow through a half hour with hardly taking a breath.
I know. So much to talk about, so much to do.
Well, and I haven't even touched on Server 2012. It's massive.
Yeah.
But it's great to have a client-side discussion once in a while, too.
No, absolutely. And I think, folks, if they want to kind of hear, as we're releasing the new information for Windows 8, as we're updating documentation, we're also working very closely with the IT Pro Evangelist, and we're building Windows 8 boot camps that we're going to start advertising in September, and they're going to start to launch in October. All of that is in the Springboard Series Insider, which you've contributed some pieces to.
I have.
And it's a great way to sort of keep up on what's new, what's the new content, how are people using this, and the discussion that we're having, we have every single month.
Stephen Rose, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much, Richard. Always a pleasure.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.